Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys get a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, everybody. I'm your host, Jason Staples. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Doc Staples. And don't forget, you can subscribe to this podcast through iTunes or your podcast catcher of choice. You can also listen to this podcast on Seminole Sports Radio from vSporto and listen on your mobile devices via the Seminole Sports Radio app, available on iTunes or the Android Marketplace. If you're enjoying this podcast, please rate us on iTunes. Tell a friend. Helps us out in terms of the whole thing long term, gives us better rankings and puts us in line for better advertising. All right, well, looking back then at the USF game today, first and foremost, I think you have to say that the coaching staff came out and made a lot of the adjustments over the course of the week that they needed to make. The plan on both sides of the ball was much simpler and much more aggressive up front, in particular on offense, and just simpler overall on defense, allowing the athletes to do what the athletes should do. Now, we talked on this podcast in the preview that Florida State needed to have a strong start because this team, confidence-wise, is a little fragile coming into this game. And safe to say that they didn't have the immediate start that they wanted as USF went straight down the field on the first play of the game, beating Tavarius McFadden down the sideline for an 80-yard touchdown on the first play of the game, first play from scrimmage. That's not exactly how you want to start the game. So at that point, you know, that was a concerning place to be for Florida State. They needed to have some confidence early on in this game. But that's where I think Dalvin Cook's first run, where he took it to the house on the first play from scrimmage for Florida State's offense, was really the start that Florida State needed. That run settled FSU down. And it showed that team that they are still who they think they are, at least in terms of potential, at least in terms of the kinds of players they have on this team. It settled them down, and yes, they gave up another touchdown on the second drive for USF, but the defense made a couple little adjustments, was able to start getting their getting better gap control and doing their job, as Jimbo Fisher talked about it at the halftime interview and talked about in the postgame interview and then talked about in Monday's interview, just doing their job and not trying to jump around and do somebody else's job, taking care of their gaps and their assignments. Then they were able to basically run USF out of the stadium for the remainder of the first half, and then through most of the third quarter before they sort of lost focus again on defense. And we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. But I think, like I said, that was the start that Florida State needed. I think Cook's run basically established, once again, a little bit of identity and a little bit of it demonstrated that, you know, we have a top guy that we can rely on kind of thing for that offense. That's how they were looking at it, I think. And it also confirmed what they'd worked on all week. And that was one of the things against Louisville. There was, I think, a lot of visible frustration that this Florida State offense and the defense, they were responding so slowly because up front, for example, they were seeing things that seemed new to them. And when you start seeing things that look new to you on the football field on Saturdays, it really impacts your confidence in how quickly you're able to go through those assignments and execute them. And I think we saw that a lot. In this game, we'll go ahead and start on the offensive side of the ball. Offensively, they did exactly what I was suggesting in the previous podcast, and that is really Florida State needed to stick to a few base run concepts and just rep them repeatedly and let the offensive line loose to play physical rather than running so much diversity in the running game. rather than running so many different concepts and so many different run plays and so on, they needed to basically stick to their base, identify who they wanted to be, and let the offensive line loose to be able to do the things that they knew they could do, and let them be able to adjust to fronts and so on off of stuff that they had repped over and over and over again in the week. And they stuck to a few base run concepts all game. And they ran it 63 times on the day. 63 rushing attempts from a Jimbo Fisher offense on the day against USF. And again, the majority of those were base runs, your standard zone runs, a little bit of power, and a few counters, including some quarterback runs that they really needed to have in this offense. I think with where DeAndre Francois is as a quarterback, they've got to continue to use his legs. Otherwise, it continues to make his life more difficult than what teams can do coverage-wise. This simplifies the game pretty significantly for him. And if you've got a kid that runs as well as he does, just use it. He's just got to make sure he protects himself. But Fisher's pointed out in the past that quarterbacks that get hurt tend to get hurt in the pocket, not on the run. So he knows that, and he'll be willing, I think, to run Francois a little bit more. And I still think that was more or less in the playbook, in the plan for Louisville. But that game got so out of hand so quickly that we ended up not seeing a whole lot of it. In any case, that's something they need to continue to do over the course of the rest of the year. But they ran it 63 times, running base stuff, letting the offensive line do their thing and play aggressive for 7.6 yards per carry on the day. That's 478 rushing yards, one short of the school record in rushing yards. And you're going to win a lot of games if you can run for 478 yards over and over and over again. I mean, that's the sort of thing. You run for that kind of yardage, you're going to win well over 90% of your games. Now, personnel-wise, I think it's pretty clear that Brock Rubel brought some stability to that right tackle position for Florida State, where Rick Leonard had been really struggling so far this year. And I think it's still the case that Leonard's upside at that position is better than Rubel's upside at that position. I still think that that's the case, and I think that that's why he started at that position early in the year, is the hope was, yeah, he might be just a little bit behind Rubel still at the beginning of the year, but give him a little bit of time to develop and, you know, give him a few games to get his feet under him, and by mid-year, he's probably a better player than what Rubel brings to the table. Well, the development didn't happen quite as quickly as what they'd hoped, and this early season schedule really doesn't allow Florida State to do a whole lot of development. When you start with Ole Miss and Louisville as your first two FBS games, and then you follow that up with USF, North Carolina, and Miami, you're not going to have much opportunity to do a lot of developing and growing a young roster. You've got to win in those games. And obviously they failed at that against Louisville, but you know, that's the really hard part about this season. This is a really young football team that Florida State needed to bring some guys along over the course of the year. And coming into the year, I think the thought was that they weren't going to need to do as much development on the offensive side because of all the guys that returned on the offensive side. But they did make a couple changes, and they had some injury issues as well. Obviously, Derek Kelly with that knee is not recovered enough to play left or to play right tackle right now. And then Leonard came in as a new starter as opposed to Brock Rubel, who had a couple last year. So, and then, you know, Bell is out at that right guard position. So you've got a true freshman playing there. And then missed a couple games at that left guard spot as well. So there's been a lot more flux especially up front on the offensive line. This was their fourth starting offensive line lineup. That's not ideal. That's not what you want. You want to be playing the same unit all year if possible, and if anything, rotating some guys in spot duty to keep guys fresh and all of that. They didn't have that. And that was not a good matchup. That was not a good thing for a team that needed to have some stability, particularly on that side of the ball early in the season against this kind of schedule. Now, defensively, we'll get to this in a moment, but defensively, they're really young. I think younger than a lot of us appreciate, and certainly younger than a lot of us expected coming into the year, thanks to some injuries. But Rubel, getting back to that, Rubel was a significant upgrade over Leonard, just because he didn't have any real busts. Just because he was able to basically stick on his guy and not get put on skates and was reliable throughout, and just in terms of taking the right steps and making sure that he didn't get whipped. Leonard at times will maul guys more than a guy like Rubel. But the losses that Leonard was having were bigger than the losses that Rubel took in this game. So it's just a steadier performance from Brock Rubel in this game than what they've gotten from Leonard so far in the year. Now, I wouldn't be surprised to see Leonard playing more later in the year, particularly once they get to a couple of the games like Wake Forest and some of these others. I expect to see more of him and more rotation in, because, again, the upside is there. And again, they're also developing guys. I mean, if Rod Johnson does decide to turn pro, which so far he hasn't played like a top 10 pick, like a top 15 pick, but he is still projected as a probable first rounder at that left tackle spot. If he turns pro, you've still got to have guys developed at that tackle spot. And yes, they've got some freshmen who may be able to come in and in their second year contribute or compete for that job. They're still going to want to have Rubel and Leonard both getting some time at that tackle spot for next year. Now, as far as I'm concerned, they should continue to stick with Dickerson at right guard, regardless of what happens with Bell, because Dickerson is developing. The kid's going to be a monster by the time he finishes, and the upside is there, and he's not making a whole lot of mistakes. He's making a few here and there. There's a miscommunication. He'll turn a guy loose once in a while, but the upside is there enough, and he's growing fast enough. He's smart enough that you just got to keep letting him learn and grow. Now, if he has a really bad series or two, then you stick Bell in there and let him let his head cool off. But overall, I think Dickerson is probably the guy you're going to want to go forward with at that spot for the rest of the year. And of course, Hakeem R solidified the left side now that he's back at that left guard position, and that helped a lot in terms of Rod Johnson, who was not tripping over him all game, as it happened some with Derek Kelly at that left guard spot. So all in all, the offensive line looked more like what Florida State fans expected coming into the year, at least those who are a little bit more optimistic. Some expected what they saw the first three games. But this was the offensive line, I think, that the Florida State coaching staff expected coming into the year. And I think it's more of what the offensive line is going to look like the rest of the year. Partly because they'll probably be sticking more with this personnel, and partly because I think they're going to remain with closer to the offensive plan that they showed in this game. More base run concepts, more just pounding the football, more using the quarterback run game as a threat. Those things are all things that I think we're going to see more the rest of the year. Now, obviously, Francois can continue to throw. He was 6 for 6 for like 140 yards in the first quarter. And then they went away from that, and they just decided to continue to bludgeon USF in the running game the rest of the game. And Francois kind of got a little bit out of rhythm as a passer the rest of the game. And that's something that they've got to continue to develop, because he's got to make sure that he can be more of a threat in the passing game, even if he's not in a passing rhythm all the time. But bottom line is, if Florida State can continue on this game plan, this type of similar to what you saw with Christian Ponder in 2008 game plan, and I've said since the preseason that's basically the identity that Florida State needs to have on offense, is more or less what they did in 2008 with Ponder as a first-year starter. Basically, if they stick with that identity, then Francois just needs to manage the game, make sure they're in the proper run checks, and then make some vertical throws when they're there. And I think he can definitely do that. He has to be a little more consistent, particularly on some of the shorter stuff, some of the dump offs and that sort of thing, than he was in the second half in particular of this game. But ultimately, he can manage this kind of offense, and his legs simplify things, allowing this offense to have that kind of identity. And there's no reason that they can't move forward doing what they did against USF. Now, obviously, it's going to be tougher to do that against teams that have top-notch front sevens, like what you have with Clemson and Florida. They'll have to come in with a little bit more variety and a little bit more more of a passing attack to bring some balance against those teams, because with the defensive front that Clemson and Florida are going to bring in, you're just not going to bludgeon those teams every play. It's just not going to happen. But you still have to stick with your base identity and continue to try to run the football and continue to be who you are. Just push it downfield a little bit more by that point in the year. And that's where, again, Auden Tate stepping in, continuing to step into a more defined role as a downfield threat, really helps this offense. And he did that again against USF. I think Pig Harrison's return, he was really the number four option early in the Ole Miss game and early in the year before he got dinged yet again. And the guy's got to stay healthy at some point. But his return as another big receiver, another big body, should help as well. So that's the sort of thing that those are the things that they've got to continue to work on and continue to work those kinds of guys into the rotation as the passing game continues to develop. But in the bottom line is they've got to make sure that they stick with this offensive identity if they're going to have continued success. And I should also mention, I think it's pretty obvious that Dalvin Cook is definitely healthy in his lower body. He does, as I'd said on previous podcasts, he has the burst that he had before. This is not a weight gain issue. This is not he's not as fast or lacks the balance that he'd had in previous years issue. He had all that. He had the burst, and he showed it in previous games. The reason you didn't see it as much, though, is he didn't have a whole lot of space. And also, it was pretty clear in this game that his right shoulder is still not, it may be fully healthy in terms of he's not going to re-injure it, but it's still not fully healthy in terms of he doesn't feel it when he takes a shot on it. That was obvious. Because you could see at one point he went down hard on that shoulder and got up and holding the shoulder and went to the sideline and got a little bit of treatment. And that's what you would expect from a guy who's still kind of recovering from a surgery. And, you know, he didn't have to take a pounding on that shoulder in this game because he was able to get to the second level and just get to the races without having to lower that shoulder and run through as much contact. So you could see the difference in this game because you could see the burst in this game because he was basically getting to that second level without having to worry about the shoulder. He was protecting the shoulder in the first couple games, without question. And it seemed to me that Fisher seems to have wanted to make a point about running through contact and about not protecting that shoulder and about playing the full 60 minutes and playing to expectations by keeping Cook in the game later on when this game was effectively in hand. I think he made his point. Other thing that also helped Cook in this game is the wide receivers really blocked downfield for the first time this year. They blocked exceptionally well downfield. I guess they blocked pretty well in the second half against Ole Miss, but the wide receivers blocked downfield and made some space for some of those long runs that Cook had. And that's why the offense was able to average 10 yards per play in the first half. Also, finally, Jaquez Patrick continues to be a changed man in the running game. He did not run like this last year in spot duty. When he got his opportunities, even when he had a 100-yard plus, I don't remember what it was exactly, it was over 150 yards against Syracuse last year, he did not run like this. He didn't run with this level of physicality and power and just turning his shoulders square and getting upfield like he did in this game. And he didn't do that consistently in practices either until this fall, or I guess we're still not technically in the fall season, but until early season practices this year. And he adds a dimension to the Florida State running game. If he continues to run like this, that changes the Florida State offense because you again have a thunder to Dalvin Cook's lightning that you can put in there, and you don't have to give Cook quite as big of a load over the course of the whole year. And you can know that this guy is going to be able to, if he gets a crease, create a lot of space. And that makes a big, big difference. And again, partly it also helps that he's also a really good pass receiver, much, much better in the passing game than you'd expect from such a big back. and also can help as a pass protector because of his ability at 235 pounds to step up and basically meet guys without having to cut guys, can meet guys with that bulk in the passing game, in the pass protection game. And I think we'll see continue to see more of that. And we'll probably see more ponies as well with both him and Dalvin Cook on the field. Moving over to the defensive side of the ball, I think this game, again, we saw a step in the right direction. It was not a clean game, but it was definitely a step in the right direction for Florida State. If you're a Florida State fan, this was a very encouraging step to see from the defensive side because, again, it represented a significant simplification of what Florida State's been trying to do on defense. You didn't see the same number of attempts to check and change plays and respond to formation and all of this. They just lined up and went with more base stuff in this game, more just beat the guy across from you type defensive calls. And largely as a result of that, you didn't see a bunch of busts on defense. You didn't see guys just running free where with nobody covering that person. Nobody was assigned to that person because somebody missed an assignment. And that, you know, the first play where McFadden gave up the long touchdown, 84-yard touchdown to Adams, was not a bust. It was not good. But that was a result of basically playing just beat the guy across from you defense, which is something that they really needed to do with this personnel, with this youth. But that was just McFadden getting beat. That was him, and he admitted after the game that he basically underestimated how fast Adams was and just got run by. And it didn't happen later in the game. In fact, they tried the same thing later in the game, and McFadden intercepted the pass. So the first play, even though it was not a good result, was actually a good thing in that, first of all, for the future, I doubt McFadden's going to underestimate guys to that degree. He didn't realize that he was playing against a kid who was faster than he was. But the fact that coverage was putting him in a situation where it was just simple, just make sure you cover the guy. That's what I think Florida State needs to be doing the rest of the year. Now, coming into this game against North Carolina, I think the Florida State defensive backs had better be aware that Mac Hollins from UNC is the fastest wide receiver that Florida State will face this year. At 6'4", he's the fastest guy they'll face this year, and he can definitely run by anyone on the Florida State roster. There's no Florida State defensive back who is in a straight line race going to have a chance of staying with Mac Hollins. So they'd better be able to respect his speed. And I think defensively, they'll probably need to keep a little bit of extra safety help over the top of Hollins. But these corners had better make sure that they don't underestimate his speed the same way that that McFadden underestimated Adams in this game. They'd better make sure they're playing over the top. And you if you're going to err, you err on making them throw underneath to that guy. But ultimately, this is what you want to see from the Florida State secondary to prevent all of the busts, all of the missed assignments. And you just didn't see that in this game because they basically executed base stuff much, much better. And this team has good enough athletes to be able to do that. Now, Lewis got beat a couple times in the slot, and that's going to happen against quality athletes, which USF has, which North Carolina has. In the slot, Lewis is going to have a really, really difficult assignment this week with the best slot receiver in the country, Ryan Switzer from North Carolina. Switzer's going to win his share, but Lewis was smart enough in a couple cases to do what was necessary. In one case, he gave up a pass interference play rather than giving up the long touchdown. Sometimes you have to make that decision. By and large, he covered well in the slot. And it's, again, partly because they just simplified and said, beat the guy across from you. And that's what they really needed to do. I mean, keep in mind, without Derwin James and Josh Sweat on the field, the Florida State defense has three returning full-time starters: DeMarcus Walker, Marquez White, and Derek Nnadi. And Nnadi was limited in this game. He only played like 27 snaps in this game because of his ankle. And it's easy to forget how young this defense is because of how talented they are. But when you've got a defense that's that young, You've got to keep things simple. Just ask Brian Van Gorder up at Notre Dame, who, like Charles Kelly, runs a fire zone heavy, a lot of complexity type defense, and has had a lot of success with that defense with experienced personnel in the past. And, you know, you go back to the 2014 Florida State game. That defense gave the Florida State offense a lot of trouble. And those types of defenses, you look in Tuscaloosa, those types of defenses can really cause you trouble. But the thing is, you've got to be able to adjust and simplify to your personnel when you're young. And this defense is super young. Without Derwin James and Josh Sweat on the field, like I said, I repeat, three returning starters. And, you know, one of your linebackers hasn't played football in 2 years. So this is a team, this is a defense that you've got to start simple. And as they get comfortable, as they lock in, you can start to add little wrinkles and so on over the course of the year. And the results in this game really show that once things are simplified and once they're locked in, they can be elite. I mean, between drives 3 and 11, so from drive 3 through drive 11, the Florida State defense gave up 27 plays for 59 yards and 2 turnovers. That's 2.19 yards per play. That, everybody, is elite defense. It's just like what they did against Ole Miss. Elite defense in the second half. But when they try to get a little overly complex, when guys are a little uncertain about their assignments, or when they're a little bit unfocused, they really have struggled. And in this game, you saw in the second, in the late third quarter through the fourth quarter, you saw that they once again lost focus. Once it was 45-14, and again, McFadden was very candid about this after the game. He said, yeah, I think we kind of let off the accelerator a little bit. Well, that's been part of the problem. They lost focus, and then they really struggled. And it shows that the scheme they were running in this game was sound. But effort and focus were the difference between giving up 2.19 yards per play and giving up, ultimately, over the course of the whole game, they gave up 8.3 yards per play. That's not very good. That's not only not elite, that's bad. That's bad defense. Now, granted, the increase to giving up about 10 yards per play in the fourth quarter did coincide with Trey Marshall going off the field and having both Westbrook and Bruton on the field at safety, and Florida State struggled at safety, struggled to tackle in space from that position. It also coincided with the young linebackers coming on the field, and they need to play more. But the young linebackers and young safeties wound up being a really bad combo up the middle, especially against a running quarterback. And you could see the difference there on how vulnerable Florida State is. I mean, they've got some depth in terms of personnel, but they don't have experience depth and some of the talent in terms of some of that depth in terms of the safety position and all that. Once you get past Trey Marshall and you get past Derwin James, they just do not have another elite body at safety. They've got some nice ones, although, again, you might put Carlos Becker as a possible elite kid down the line, but he's in his first semester in college, just not ready. And Nate Andrews is experienced, but he's not an elite safety. So, and the same thing with the linebacker position. If you want any experience after you go past Hoskins and Thomas, you have Patty. You have Nick Patty, a former walk-on who really athletically is not of the same cloth as the rest of the guys on that roster on defense. Otherwise, you go to true freshman. Well, that makes a difference. And quite frankly, Florida State's starting linebackers struggled in this game and struggled against Louisville. And that's one of the reasons that they've continued to have some trouble with run-first quarterbacks. Roderick Hoskins, this is really his third game against FBS competition this year where he struggled. He did not have a good day once again. And Matthew Thomas has his moments, but he's also clearly knocking off some rust. There are times where he's just slow to diagnose and it isn't quite at the level of instinct that he showed a couple years ago. I think those will come back, and there are times where you can see him start to flash that, but he's not there. Bottom line is, though, at this point, Florida State needs to have Matthew Thomas and Trey Marshall on the field. As long as Derwin James is out with an injury, those two guys need to be on the field anytime the game is in doubt. Because when Thomas and Marshall are not on the field, Florida State's defense is really vulnerable up the middle in the passing game and in the running game. As far as the defensive line, Fred Jones had another quality day, continues to be a lunch pail guy, really heavy hands, sort of the underrated pickup of his class, continues to outperform and outproduce some higher rated guys from his own class. You can see he's continued to develop and is at this point a viable player at that position. DeMarcus Walker actually had his first sack, not only his first sack, but realize he had 4.5 sacks in the second half against Ole Miss. And in the rest of the season, up until this game, he did not have a tackle for loss. So DeMarcus Walker had not had a tackle for loss in the season outside of the second half of the Ole Miss game coming into this game. And he had a sack, which is his first tackle for loss since then, but only a sack. And Florida State needs to continue to get more from DeMarcus Walker. Now, he's able right now, defenses are able to block him and focus on him more right now because Josh Sweat's out and because Florida State's defensive tackles have not been elite to this point. With Naughty dinged up and all that, they've not taken the attention away from him. But ultimately, he's got to be able to produce more if Florida State's going to have is going to continue to grow on defense as the season goes on. Burns also played well. He continues to be a little bit light in the butt to be able to play against the run, but also had a sack in this game and was terror off the edge for Florida State as a pass rusher and also chasing down Flowers once he got into that zone read game and some of the quarterback run game. Defensively, in the secondary, I think the defensive backs, the corners are fine. White actually may be the third best cover corner on the team at this point. Yes, Lewis has some busts once in a while, but if you're just talking about one-on-one coverage players, both McFadden and White may actually be, their upside is higher. And that says a lot because White projects as a guy who's going to play some in the NFL at that position. Now, safeties, like I said, are a mess without Derwin James, and especially without Derwin and Marshall when they're both off the field. That safety is right now a real concern on the defense until Derwin James gets back. And they may need to play Becker or even Ermin Lane, who's been repping at safety now, sooner rather than later if they continue to have any issues with Marshall not being on the field and all that. Westbrook so far has not tackled well in space. He did flash more speed than I expected in chasing Flowers down from behind, but he has not tackled well in space and he hasn't played physical. Bruton is just he's not a terrific athlete. He's a guy that you were probably not going to see much from until his third or fourth year. I mean, think LaMarcus Brutus, and think about LaMarcus Brutus playing early. That's really not what you hope for when you're thinking about Calvin Bruton coming into the year. You're hoping that he's playing a lot on special teams, and right now he's getting a little bit more time at safety than what you'd hope at this phase of his career. Bottom line, if you're a Florida State fan, there was a lot of good to take away from this game, particularly in the simplification that we saw on both sides of the ball and the dominance that we saw from the Florida State running game, both on the offensive line and the tight ends blocking extremely well, the wide receivers blocking well, and Dalvin Cook looking like Dalvin Cook, and Jaquez Patrick looking like what he should look like as a big back. That's all really good things to take away. The defense looking really, really good for about 9 drives and then sort of reverting back to unfocused. That's the negative. But the questions moving forward are, can Fisher and Kelly continue to stick with the halftime plan, as I'm going to call it? The simplified, well, here's what they've done and let's just go in and be Florida State. Here's what we do well and we're just going to run what we do well until they can stop it. And then we'll introduce some other things. But we're just going to come in with the halftime plan and focus on our identity and what we do well. Can Florida State continue to stick with that on both sides of the ball instead of focusing on opponents and loading up with contingencies and all that? That's the real question moving forward. I think this game will help push them further in that direction. I think they did take a long, hard look in the mirror and decide that they needed to have a clearer identity, and I think that's where they're headed. But it's easy again to get sort of off of that identity. That's what they're gonna be fighting over the rest of the year. Can they stay with that identity while continuing to build for contingencies against better teams? And finally, can Kelly get his defense to play hard and focused football for four quarters? That's the real question as well. Can that young defense stay focused and play hard and physical football for four quarters? And one of the things that I got a text from someone in the program about that and saying one of the issues that Florida State has right now, and this is paradoxical, is that they have, I believe the quote was, we've got 22 really nice guys as starters, high character guys, nobody that makes you feel uncomfortable. And going back to, and then the next text was something along the lines of, you played in this program, you know you've got to have four or five guys that make you kind of uncomfortable if you're going to be successful. You've got to have those guys. And that does not mean criminals, by the way. That means guys, though, that play with an edge. That means your Telvin Smiths, your LaMarcus Joyners, your Jalen Ramseys, your Derwin Jameses. And Derwin not being on the field matters a lot for that. But those guys set the tone. You know, Timmy Jernigan. These are guys that don't just want to go out and play football and play winning football. They want to hurt their opponent. They don't want to injure him for a career or for a season, but they want to hurt somebody when they're out there. And so far, defensively, we haven't seen that from anybody in this group. We got a lot of nice guys on both sides of the ball, but nobody that really plays with that I want to hurt somebody mentality outside of Derwin James. And he's not playing right now. So that's the next thing. Are they going to be able to develop that? Can Kelly get his defense to play that way? Can they find somebody that's going to step up and play with that mentality for four quarters? That's the real question moving forward. It's going to be interesting to see this week against a much better offense in North Carolina, how they're able to respond. An offense that's not quite the runner at quarterback with Mitch Trubisky, but still a dual threat guy. Will they be able to stop the run a little bit better? Will they be able to keep from getting beaten over top by a team that's been able to beat a lot of teams over top since the Georgia game when they played the first half without Mac Hollins, their best deep threat, and in a game where Trubisky never looked comfortable. He's settled in since then, and I think they've called better games for him. It's going to be interesting. We'll evaluate that game on the next podcast, actually the next two podcasts. We'll evaluate that game much more, but that's going to do it for us today. And before we get out of here, just a reminder, once again, you can follow me on Twitter, at Doc Staples. You can follow Seminole Sports Radio, at Seminoles Radio, for the latest on FSU sports. Make sure to catch our next podcast, which will cover the Florida State-UNC matchup. I'm Doc Staples, and this has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, a VSporto channel. Thanks for listening. I made this.